Welcome back, everybody, to another episode in the DistressedPro.com Professional Podcast and Interview Series. And today, I'm really happy to have Paul Burkett on the phone. And he is from Automation Finance, which is, you're a full-time first and second lien note investment and sales firm. Is that right, Paul?
Yep, that's really it. I mean, mostly we're an asset manager, but we also do sell some loans.
And so what, one of the things I'm excited to talk about is how you transitioned into this. I know from LinkedIn, I know that it's been just about 3 years, but then you're saying that you were moonlighting for a year or more before that, and you didn't come from the real estate business at all, did you?
No, I've really no business doing what I'm doing. So I guess the words of hope for people who are, you know, getting started is if I can do it, anyone can do it.
Yeah.
I came from the consumer goods business. So I'd worked at PepsiCo for 18 years before I got into the non-performing loan business. So
right.
Go ahead.
The beverage industry is—it's the perfect starting point for getting into non-performing loans, isn't it?
It is absolutely. It is in parallel in absolutely no way whatsoever.
Yeah. So then, tell us a little bit about how you made this transition, because you really do have like a deep history in that other business of what is it, over 20 years, 25 years, something like that.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you've got like a very healthy note business. So how did that happen?
I think like so many of these things, it happens by accident. So I was a corporate guy. I'd worked at PepsiCo for 18 years, and I'd always been buying real estate on the side. I came to the U.S. in summer of 2010, and we had a corporate meeting down in Marco Island in Florida. And I guess at my heart, always a real estate guy, and I picked up one of those magazines the realtors have with, you know, all of the ads for their homes that they're selling, and I just couldn't believe the prices. So I extended my trip and stayed the weekend, drove up to Cape Coral, Fort Myers, and started looking at some of these homes. And I just couldn't believe it. I mean, I had some rentals back in Europe, which I'm from Ireland originally. And I just couldn't believe these places. You could buy them for $65 a foot. This is back in 2010, of course. Mm. And they were renting for $1,300 bucks a month. So thought this was the most incredible kind of business ever. 8, 9, 10, 11, you know, net cap rates was terrific.
Yeah.
I come from Europe where, you know, 4, 5, 6% cap rates is, you know, the norm. So started buying single family homes and, you know, raised a little bit of money from some of my colleagues at work, some of my friends back in Ireland. And, you know, 3 or 4 years later, I had 40 doors. And this was supposed to be a passive kind of income. But anyone who does single family home rental will know it's not passive in any way. Even though we had property managers on all of them, I wasn't managing anything myself. It was still every weekend and, you know, every night after work. So I figured like we couldn't really scale that anymore. And, you know, just happenstance, I put an offer in on property. It was a short sale. And the bank person managing it called me to say, I'm sorry, we'd accepted your offer, but we need to send you back your $5,000 because we can't complete the short sale. And they couldn't complete the short sale because they'd sold the loan. And that was a mystery to me because, again, in Europe, you can't have a private individual holding a mortgage. That would actually be a criminal kind of conviction, like money lending is highly regulated.
Yeah.
And so, cut a long story short, I ended up meeting the guy who bought the loan, and he, over an hour, explained what he was doing and kind of blew my mind. And so that was the last piece of real estate I bought. I then spent the next 2 years selling all the real estate and getting into the note business. And so I think I did that the way most people do it. I went on a weekend course, and then, you know, I got a mentor. And then I got a business partner and just kind of, you know, slowly built up the expertise I thought I needed to get started.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of how we did it.
So how did you find, like, how did you end up getting into your first transaction? Will you tell us a little bit about what that looked like?
Yeah. I went to a conference in Vegas, either PaperSource or there's another one in Vegas. The name escapes me at the moment, but there's two that a lot of new people go to.
Mm-hmm. Noteworthy.
And I went Noteworthy. That was it. It mm-hmm. was either Noteworthy or PaperSource. I don't recall. I think PaperSource. Met one of the sellers there. There were two or three sellers, and ended up, partnering with someone who'd been in the business, and bought 10 second liens for $100,000 and, worked them out over the following 6 months. And, we were very successful, and that was 2013, I think, probably the summer of 13. And then went from there, then bought a slightly bigger pool, and then bought a slightly bigger pool, and then, was out raising funds, and found a hedge fund that were looking to get into the space. They didn't have much operational capability or capacity, and so they were looking for someone to invest with. So that kind of gave us a leg up to the next level to go from buying $200,000 or $300,000 at a time to a couple of $1 million at a time. And then the last deal we did was $4.5 million. So kind of scaling up slowly but surely. We probably grew too fast. I think probably we definitely grew too fast at the beginning. Trying to manage a portfolio of first liens and a portfolio of second liens, there's quite a bit of work in that. We probably went too fast too soon. But we then spent the last 2 years really trying to make our systems institutional quality so that we have a business that we can really scale for the future.
So can you tell me a little bit about that? Because you're not a big organization over there, right?
No, we are five people in total. And so you need to be, you need to have a process for everything. And I say you need a process for opening the mail, and people laugh, but I'm serious. You need a process for opening the mail, because as you scale, you get more and more mail. And this business is a litigation heavy business and a regulation heavy business. Every borrower will make you out to be the worst guy that has ever walked the earth. So you need evidence that you aren't. And most courts, maybe that's a slight exaggeration, but many courts lean heavily in favor of the borrower rather than the lender. And so in a lot of these foreclosure cases and contested foreclosures, typically the party with the best evidence wins. Hmm. And so you need to keep records of everything. You need to be highly organized, and you need to be kind of, everything needs to be robust, great record keeping and so on. And the only way to do that, particularly at scale, is to be highly systematic.
Yeah.
And so I have a business partner and co-founder who came from PricewaterhouseCoopers. And he is just a systems machine. And so everything we do is systems, systems, systems. And so, a new starter comes, their laptops, their file structures, their folders, everything is precisely the same as everybody else's, so that it's a plug and play setup. And that's the only way to be reliable at scale.
Yeah.
So four or five people, we've got about 1,500 assets under management right now.
Wow. So can I walk us back a little bit to 2013 and just talk about that time when you're still full-time executive in the drink business, in the PepsiCo business?
Yeah.
And what that sort of looked like? I think a lot of people who I hear from, they're professionals at something, and now they don't want to do that. They want to get into something like this, but just have a hard time getting their heads around what that would even look like to have both those things. And
yeah.
How do you, where do you find the time, and what are those activities that are most important when you're what does that all look like? And I wonder if you could tell us a bit about that for you.
Yeah, there's no easy answer to any of this, right? If you've got a full-time job and you're successful at it, then you're probably spending a lot of your time on that thing. And if you want to be successful at something else, then it's a transition, and it's hard to segue. You need to at some point make a call. The note business is a follow-up type business, so yeah. You need to be working on it all the time. It's not the sort of thing you can leave to one side for a few days while you're back at your commercial real estate business or whatever other business, your rental business. And so, you know, what I did was we bought those 10 loans. Now, 10 loans, you can asset manage yourself, and you can get away without having terrific systems. 100 loans, you will drown very, very quickly unless your systems are robust. So the theory that I had, the plan that I had, was we would take these 10 loans and we would use them to create systems. The issue with doing it that way was that 10 loans doesn't generate enough data to really build robust systems because you just don't have enough instances of things going wrong to really plan it through. So we then bought 65 more loans. And so now we have 75 or 76 loans. And that gave you a little bit more data. But the short answer is, for the 6 months getting into the start of this business, it was, you know, it was just relentless work, because you're learning a business. It's not an easy business to learn, because so many things are unique. So many states are unique. So many counties are unique. The issues that come up are not, you know, it's not cookie cutter, which is why it's, you know, such an attractive business, because once you build your expertise, it's highly scalable. You can make great returns. But it's getting to that point when you have all your systems, there's no shortcuts, and it's painful.
Right.
And so it was just relentless follow-up. So we have, you know, we started off with spreadsheets, and you just wrote down every single thing you did. And Sundays were spent just planning. So what was the week ahead going to be? What were we doing? What were the follow-ups with each attorney in the foreclosure cases? What were the follow-ups with the borrowers who we were getting to reperform? And what were the follow-ups with the realtors for the REOs that we were selling? And that learning curve was steep. And, I mean, we're still learning a lot because at scale, your systems that worked at 60 loans may not work at 600 or 1,600. So it's just practice, 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 like everything. Keep great records and, you know, be clear on where you want to end up. A lot of people want 10 or 15 or 20 loans. And that's their objective. Okay, well, if that's your objective, then that's a different plan than what I was trying to do, which was we were trying to build like an institution. I want to build a business that's just like a bank.
Yeah. So maybe what we should talk about now, right? So you've got this business. It's a system. You're constantly getting new loans. And then you tell me that it's only just recently that you've begun to resell loans. You talk a little bit about how that's happening and why that's happening and how that becomes part of the business.
Yeah, I never understood why people sold loans, because to buy good loans, certainly when you're starting out, is hard. Finding inventory is hard. So you can call hedge funds, you can call banks, and you know, for the majority of people, the majority of cases, it's hard to find good inventory. So we were buying and holding. But after about a year of buying and holding, you start to get a bit of a reputation with the servicers from whom you buy, with some of the banks, with some of the hedge funds, the bigger hedge funds that sell. And you're solving a problem for them, particularly the people who are buying loans from HUD and from the GSEs, because they have an issue, and their issue is they can't buy and hold everything either. So they're buying $600 or $700 million worth of loans. There's a tail in that pool, and the tail is typically loans that have a balance, or, you know, low balance, low value. And so we focus on those loans. Our average BPO is $115,000 for firsts. Mm. Most big hedge funds don't want that inventory. They don't want it because it costs too much to run. There's too many headaches. It's just a difficult portfolio to run, and they're happy to sell it, and they'll sell it, but they'll only sell it in bulk. You can't go and buy 20 or 30 loans. They want to sell several hundred loans. And so we found that as we were buying, we were constantly running out of capital. We also had smaller investors coming to us saying, hey, can I buy 3 loans or 5 loans? Mm. And so we said, well, why don't we sell some of the loans? We can't keep all of them. And so in May, we just started selling. And it's been a good way to kind of build our reputation among the smaller investors. And it also helps us offer our portfolio out for sale. And so the way we work is, you know, our entire portfolio is for sale. We run a discounted cash flow model. And so if you want to buy any loan that we own, you can buy it. Just a matter of, is the price that you offer better than what our model says the thing will be worth if we hold it through foreclosure or get the borrower to reperform? And so there's a good opportunity to sell loans in that kind of first 90 days after we buy a pool, where we haven't that much money invested in the loans. And if we can sell it and make 7 or 10 or 12%, you know, on an IRR basis, that's 60 or 70% IRR. That keeps our investors happy. It shows progress on the pool. And it means that we have, you know, some returns to distribute back to investors almost immediately after the purchase. And for the buyer, they're getting loans at a much lower price than they would buy from, you know, some of the other sources. So right. It kind of wins for everybody.
So that kind of brings me to one of the questions that I'm most this is like top of the list of frequently asked questions, which is, how much do you pay for a loan?
Yeah.
And so I know, well, you know, my answer to that is what loan on what, where, know, and all that. So maybe you can help shed some more light on that, and maybe how you approach that, and how the people who buy from you approach that.
Yeah. So there's two approaches to this. I think two kind of schools of thought. People who are in this business back when there was incredible value, where you were buying, you know, first liens in California for 40 cents on the dollar. Mm-hmm. They were looking at pools. They were stratifying the pool. They were taking the top half, let's say, and they were doing relatively, you know, robust due diligence on that top half. And they were saying, okay, this is a good pool. This is a medium pool. This is a bad pool, whatever. And they were saying, okay, this is worth 30 cents or 50 cents or 70 cents on the dollar. And they were using some sort of a model to say what they would pay then for the whole pool. That was fine when your blended rate was maybe, let's say, 50 cents on the dollar, because there was plenty of room to make mistakes and still make money. But pricing has gone up quite a bit. The last HUD pool traded at 72 or 73 cents. So when you're paying that kind of money, you can't afford to have too many dud loans in your pool. And so what we have done is we spend a lot of money on due diligence. We probably spend more than anybody else. And the reason we do that is because if you're buying loans, if your average loan is 100 grand and you're paying 50 grand for it and one goes bad, you've got a serious problem when you're doing that at scale. Mm. So there's two areas where you've got to be really robust. The first is, what's the value of the asset? And we have it all the time. BPOs, I can get you a BPO on the same asset and I can show you that it's worth 60 grand, 80 grand or 110 grand mm-hmm. on the same place. Yep. And that spread is just too wide. And so, you know, we've just got to be, I'm not looking when I'm buying from one of the really big hedge funds to win by buying stuff below market, because buying below market on the basis of your BPO being, you know, a buyer's BPO, you know, that you're going to just get a lower value, that's not a scalable business. I want to buy at fair market value, and I want my competitive advantage to be that I work the loan out faster than, you know, my model suggests I will. And that's how I generate returns. So it really depends on the quality of the asset. If you're looking at a vacant 5 years since the last payment, single family home in the Rust Belt, you've got to assume it's been empty for 5 years. There's been probably quite a bit of winterization type damage over those 5 years. You know, is there any value in that loan? There may be no value at all. So the first thing I want to do is find out, is the structure still standing? Assuming it is and it's secure, what's the rehab likely going to be? What's the end, what's the after repair value likely to be, and work back from that. And you might buy that loan, a 35 grand house, you might pay 12 or 13 grand for that loan. Or on a 100 grand house that's occupied, you work back, the borrower is likely to perform. So what's the payment going to be, and what does that return, what's that going to be as a return? So it's more of a financial instrument calculation than it is an asset-based calculation. So you do both, and then you just, make your bid based on that. So it's as much science, as much art, I guess, as science.
Yeah. And so, and these are the types of systems that you're talking about that you've built out, is where you can rapidly make these assessments.
Yeah, and we try to do it at scale. At the end of the day, it's a house on a street with a borrower, and you've got to get down to that level of granular. Is this guy going to pay or not pay? And that's based on bankruptcy and just every variable that you can have. So this is an operator's business, because 80% or 90% of the variables are known. You can know them. And then you need to just assign a value to every one of those. So, my business partner is an operations guy. He's way, way, way better than I am. Him at his worst day is better than me on my best day. So if you're not an operator, then you need a partner who's an operator. If you're trying to do it at scale, if you're doing 10 loans, then you can know them all by name. You can go and drive the streets. You can, you can really get granular as if it's an actual piece of real estate you're buying. So it depends on your objective.
Yeah. So maybe now then would be a good time for you to talk a little bit about who makes a good buyer for you and for the assets that you're selling. And if there are any other ways that people can work with you, maybe we should illuminate, that. And then after we talk about who a good buyer is, how they'd get on your list and make sure that they're there when you have something that you're offering.
Yeah. I mean, so this is it's an unusual business. So we have a mailing list that people can just go to automationfinance.com, and there's a trade desk tab, and you just fill in the NDA. It takes 2 minutes, and that automatically will add you to the list, and we'll mail you out pools of loans for sale. And I put out a pool every month, typically about 100, 150 loans. I used to send out the entire tape of everything we owned, but really the only bids we get are on the lower value stuff. So there's no point sending out stuff, $300,000 or $400,000 homes in California when people just don't want to buy that. They're typically buying lower value stuff. And I can see why, it's probably lower risk. And the returns can be higher, especially if you're a specialist buyer. So we've got a bunch of people who only buy in Ohio or Michigan or Indiana, and they know the town, they know, exactly what they're buying. And so that's kind of their strategy. Good buyers, this is a labor intensive business. So even getting people the collateral and getting them, stuff to review after their bid has been accepted is quite labor intensive. So I guess like any business, whether it's real estate or anything else, people who come and kick the tires and are window shoppers but don't actually buy anything, that's just a huge time sink. So, I mean, that's I guess the key thing. It's like any business. We're all looking for the people who say what they do and then do what they say and close the thing. And so, I mean, it's easy to say, but you'd be surprised. I might get 50 bids in a month and end up selling 20 assets. So, 30 of them, are not real. You just don't know who the real ones, are. So, a lot of new people, when they're getting into it, they've got to learn by doing, and that's fine. So, I mean, it's just part of the business. So,
what's the typical first investment size with you that somebody would, you really ought not bother unless you plan to invest at least what?
I mean, on the first side, we started off doing $100,000 minimum. Mm-hmm. And then we had a lot of buyers come to us and say, look, $100,000 is just too much. I don't spend that much money. The issue for us is, selling 100 grand's worth of loans, we're probably making 10 grand. Mm-hmm. And by the time you've pulled all the collateral, paid the attorneys to do the purchase and sale agreement, got all your assignments and allowances done, FedEx stuff out, allowed for something, you know, there was a mistake on a document and had to be redrafted, you're it's just not worth making the sale.
Yep.
So we said, okay, so here's what we'll do. We'll make the minimum 50 grand. But if it's below 50 grand, we'll charge $1,000, and that covers the FedEx costs and the legal fees. Mm-hmm. And so it's a wash, and it allows us to build a base of people who are, you know, buying loans from us. And it just, you know, it's good for, you know, us growing, you know, over the next, say, 10 years.
Right.
And so we get a lot of guys coming, guys and gals coming, and they just want to buy one loan, and that's fine. And they're going to foreclose because they want the property, or they want to reperform the borrower, whatever it is. Different people have different kind of interests or skill sets. And so we'll do that. And sometimes you'll get bids. We now put minimum pricing because people coming in with bids that, you know, you're buying the entire HUD pool for $700 million. You couldn't buy this one loan in Michigan for that price.
Right.
So, you know, just keep it real. And then you'll also get people coming in who are obviously new because they're bidding just sort of way too high. And we don't accept those bids either. And people are always surprised.
It's very generous of you.
Well, it's not benevolence, because if I sell you a loan for 50 grand and you work it for a year and you end up returning, you know, 50 grand or 55 grand or something, you've killed yourself for a year to make 5 grand. Mm-hmm. You may buy loans again, you may not, but you're not going to buy them from me mm-hmm. because, you know, it was my fault, you know, for selling you the loan, right? So we don't want to do that. I'd rather not sell it than have people have a bad experience. And this is a reputation business. So I don't want people to feel like they've bought something that they shouldn't have bought. And in many cases, it's inexperience that they're just overbidding. So we play the long game and just don't accept that bid. And sometimes that means, you know, we don't do business with that person again. Sometimes they come back later. You just never know.
Right.
But the typical buyer is buying two or three loans and working them out and coming back again in 6 weeks or 12 weeks and doing it again. And that's the key thing. We get a lot of people who also come in and trying to, you know, knock the ball out of the park. This is not a knock the ball out of the park business. This is a detail business. And this is a, you know, get stuff turned around in 6 months and go back to your investor with IRRs in the 20s. And most investors are just delighted with that, and they'll give you more money. And we've, since May, we've probably got about a core buyer group of 10 or 12 people or groups. And they now buy almost every month, 5, 6, 7 loans, not huge purchases. And then we've wondered, but you can see that they used to, you know, invest 50 grand and now they're investing 250 grand mm-hmm. each time. So that's the way you grow. This is not a get rich quick scheme. This is a slow, steady kind of a growth business.
Well, this has been really, really good from a number of different angles. And I love always hearing the stories about how folks make the transition. I really appreciate you coming on here and sharing that. And if you're somebody who's looking to just kind of get your start and get into, you know, a couple of loans and you feel like you're equipped for this and you're not going to waste anybody's time, then I'd really recommend that you go over and check out Paul's site. It's automationfinance.com. Is that right?
Yep, that's right. We'll put you on the mailing list. You'll get the monthly pool of loans for sale, and the tape we send out is an institutional grade tape. So you have all the information that you would ever need, that any bank would need when they're buying a loan. So it just makes the system more streamlined. It'll make you a better buyer because you'll know the questions to ask. And so we'll take an indicative bid. The loan will be awarded. You'll then have, 21 days to do your due diligence. And we'll get to purchase and sale agreement. We rep and warrant all of the papers, so you're not taking any risk as a buyer. You have 90 days to, you know, if we've any trailing documents, we'll cure those in the following 90 days because we're trying to help people to be a success.
Great. Well, that's been super helpful. Thank you, Paul. And I know you were talking to you after you've had to take a red eye and then like be available here for us to do this. So I really, really appreciate you taking the time. And I think that this will be good for anybody who's getting started. It's like both inspirational and really practical, because if they've got some cash and they're ready to go, then it sounds like you'd be a great source and a very fair source for them to get started with. So I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, sure. I think the key things, the takeaways are, like, take your time. If you're not expert at every part of the business, then maybe partner up with someone who is. Don't take too much risk. Don't buy too many loans, and just grow it slowly and steadily. IRRs in the 20s are nothing to be ashamed of. That's terrific. If the guys who are trying to hit the ball out of the park take on too much risk, make mistakes. So don't be that. Don't be that person.
Absolutely. All right, Paul, thank you so much again. Really, really appreciate it. And we'll get this right out, and I'm sure you'll be hearing from a number of our subscribers.
Terrific. Thanks, Brett.
Thanks.